Message in the Bottle. Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor, with us. Great musical choice today.
They might be Giants.
Yes, love it.
They're gonna be Giants.
On fire, baby.
On fire. This song is on fire. I gotta stop choosing such good songs because I just don't want to talk. I just want to listen.
I know.
I love that song.
But I like that we've transitioned from a great month of CCR into back-to-back weeks of They Might Be Giants.
I think it's epic. And since next week, I'm going to be taping tomorrow and pretending it's next week.
Shh. No, it's all right. Radio secret, man.
No, it's all right. Okay. It's all right because I'll probably give it away anyway.
All right.
But that's okay. Yeah, no, because I'm excited because next week I'm actually doing something with other vaccinated people.
That's fun.
I'm excited. I'm doing a thing. And
you have a play date?
I have a play date. I'm going to... It's not really a restaurant. It's a place called Nostrano. It's where we get our salmon from. And the guy has like a full Tuscan kitchen. And,
oh, my.
I'm going with a couple gentlemen, and we're going to eat.
That's fantastic.
And I'm very excited about it.
Good for you.
Yeah. So, like, it's, you know, and my kids got their first shot yesterday.
Yeah.
We have our boots.
Mine got his today.
You know, except for, you know, the all the people that don't have the vaccine. And, like, it's,
Right.
But, I know the numbers aren't encouraging, but it's like, I really am, like, this is my favorite time of year, right? Like,
yes.
Thanksgiving and Christmas.
But I think we're like you guys, you know, we've said, hey, once the boy is vaccinated, yeah, we're going to go back a whole lot closer to normal. Now, I'll avoid big groups of unvaccinated people if I know they're out there, but
I don't really encounter big groups of unvaccinated people in my life. I don't encounter big groups. I'm sort of introverted anyway. Yeah, so,
me too.
I mean, you know, they sort of started to make this joke at the beginning of all this before we knew how serious it was going to be. Like, this is I just have to stay in my house.
Right.
And not associate with people.
I've been training for this my whole life.
Let me think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it got kind of crazy and horrible.
Yes.
One thing I'm very excited about is that we're planning our trip to France. And which, you know, like, again, it's part professional and part leisure. Mm. And I'm, you know, it's just getting back into I think people in Maine can understand this, right? Like, one of my fascinations with wine is walking in a vineyard. Like, it's incomparable, and it doesn't have to be a vineyard in France. It can be a vineyard in, you know, the Finger Lakes region of New York or wherever. It's palpable, like you go walking in the Bangor City Forest or something like that. Like, you know, it's, I think we in Maine, you know, appreciate communing with nature, and that's sort of, with me, it's communing with nature, with history, with the very essence of sort of what I do. So I'm so psyched to get back there. We've been talking, or we will, you know, be talking this month about South America, which is actually vineyard land I've not been in, and it's, you know, it's tricky to get there for me and for a lot of people. But it's an interesting place to think about because it is a 6 months opposite of us, right? So right now it is getting nice, and whereas here it's a little chilly in the mornings. And so that actually is kind of, it's very convenient in my line of work because it ensures sort of this, it's like that old line about drinking, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? Well, it's harvest time somewhere. And that's, right, that's an encouraging thing. You know that there's wine coming, especially in light of the fact that we've had a couple of, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, vintages that have gone awry from anything from hail to flames. And, I needn't dwell on the specifics of that, but you get the point. I often talk about the fact that Argentina and South America got a lot of their tasty grapes from the phylloxera epidemic, right? The things that happened in the mid to late 1800s where the phylloxera last went over and a lot of immigrants started coming over. But actually, it was in 1556 that there was the first established vineyard in Argentina in what is now the San Juan region of Mendoza. The first commercial vineyard was only a year later, which is interesting. I mean, you know, not only do I joke that Europeans like to bring the booze, but then they also like to profit off of it. So well done there. It was by Jesuit missionaries. So, you know, it was part of their mission, how they kept the mission going. And then shortly thereafter, a provincial governor, Domingo Faustino Sarmiento, instructed a French agronomist to, I should mention it, Miguel Timé Puget, to bring back clippings from France. And that led to the first plantings of the now famous Malbec, as well as, you know, other stuff that either succeeded or failed or anywhere in between. It wasn't really what led to the mass industrial success of Malbec, but that's kind of when the first noble grapes started to get in there. And of course, the other main grape that we talk about in South America, in Argentina and Chile primarily, is país. And we talk about that, it was brought by the conquistadors, probably from the Canary Islands, en route to their eventual subjugation of the entire continent. And well done there. In Argentina, the país grape crossbred naturally with the Torrontes grape, which is a white grape. It is a very aromatic white grape. So the país there is also named Criolla Chica because it's a little bit lighter and more aromatic than the Chilean cousin that is essentially pure país from descended, you know. And again, you say pure, but I remind everybody, grapes mutate every generation. It's like what they do. So, you know, pure is as pure does. But there you have it. The big the boom that happened in Mendoza especially, but all of Argentina, was that in 1886, the first commercial railway from Buenos Aires was completed, thus creating, you know, commercial transport. I mean, you know, again, what do Europeans bring after they bring the booze? They bring the commerce. And you know, again, bully for them. How else do you make it, right? Of course, in the mid-1800s, that is when the phylloxera louse was decimating the vineyards of Europe. And, of course, the immigrants bringing clippings brought that too. So, you know, however, Argentina, the better parts of Argentina and Chile and all these places are these high altitude places. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But really, it was the Catena family, primarily Nicholas Catena, Dr. Nicholas Catena, and now his daughter, Dr. Laura Catena, has been continuing his work. But these are the first people that said, let's go into these high altitude regions where it's very desert like, it's dry farmed. There's not a chance for phylloxera to survive. There's not a chance for, like, mildew to be a thing. So these are, you know, biodynamic vineyards in high altitudes. And now that work has been, you know, carried on by a new generation. Actually, at this point, two new generations, really, of winemakers really scattered throughout these high altitude regions of Chile, of Argentina, that are, you know, creating some fabulous, fabulous things. We talk a lot about some of the grapes, but one of the grapes that we don't talk about, but we're sipping today, is Petit Verdot. So Malbec, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Petit Verdot, these are Bordelaise grapes. And so when, what's his name, Puget was sent back, these are the grapes that they were bringing. These are grapes that were prized, that were considered hardy enough to sort of handle it, right? So Petit Verdot is one of the, it's usually used as a blending grape, but again, in Argentina, like Malbec, you're starting to see, you know, single varietal bottlings of things. So Petit Verdot, really, really neat, very dark toned, dark berry fruit. This particular bottling from Ruca Malen sees a little bit of oak treatment, so it's fairly voluptuous and wonderful, and fairly affordable. So this is a nice wine for people at this time of year that are looking for something a little bit more broad shouldered. So again, the Ruca Malen Petit Verdot. Other things, Argentina, fifth largest producer in the world, and it wasn't nearly. But there was a huge uptick in the middle of the last century. Of course, everybody sort of had to get through the major obstacles of the first half of the 20th century. Everything from, well, before the 20th century, the phylloxera epidemic to worldwide depressions, wars, etc., that really, really stifled commerce. But, of course, after World War II, a lot of Europeans found their way there. For varying reasons, I'm not, but a lot of people who knew how to make wine, say in steeper, cooler climates, say Germany, Austria, places like that. So you will see a lot of that kind of those surnames down there, as well as a lot of French. My goodness, a lot of French investment happened in the 90s, early 2000s. And I think for that reason that I was just sort of talking about is there is just infinite potential there for a lot of the grapes that the French already know how to grow. And it's land where you, I mean, Bordeaux is like kind of swampy. It's kind of like New Jersey. I mean, without the bodies in the swamps, maybe there's probably, that's not the point. Look, the point is it's not real nice. It's not, there's not high elevations. There's not a lot of opportunities for this new era of dynamic winemaking that encompasses dry farming and, you know, biodynamic farming without worry about, you know, having to spray for mildew. I mean, Sauterne in Bordeaux is a place that's famous for noble rot, right? Like, it's, you know, you don't have Sauterne coming out of the high altitude in the Andes. It's just not a thing. So just an interesting juxtaposition of why there would be all that investment both in work. And also, the Argentines, the people who have established these estates, flew in French people. So it was, you know, mutual investment. Michel Roland, very famous flying winemaker, is involved in Claude de la Siete and all these other places. So it's a real, real genuflection to the fact that it's sort of the, you know, the as the Willamette Valley perhaps is the new Burgundy, perhaps the Andes are the new Bordeaux in a new and dynamic way. Running out of time here, so I will talk to you all, quote, next week. if I don't seem to have knowledge of what happens in, say, the football world, etc., again, it's because I'm broadcasting live next week. Anyway,
Radio Magic.
Hope you're all well. Get the shot. Take care of each other. I'll talk to you next week.
It's a good plan. Thank you, Eric. Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Message in the bottle. Hear all of Eric's segments. Just go to the website, downtownwithrichkimble.com. Click on the Message in the Bottle tab.